Welcome to Mountain Muse. I'm Nancy Clancy with my co-host, Emmy DeGrappa. And today we're speaking with Wyoming Governor, the Honorable Matt Mead. Thank you so much, Governor Mead, for coming in and taking the time from your busy schedule to visit with us today.
Well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation to both of you. Thank you.
You bet. What we'd like to do is just learn a little bit more about you, your Jackson roots, and your journey to become governor of Wyoming.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing how things turn out once in a while. So I'll be eager for your questions, or if you want me to narrate, I can do that.
No, I've got a few questions
all right,
for you.
Very good.
Yeah. Well, you're the son of Mary and Pete Mead,
yes.
And the grandson of Martha and Cliff Hansen.
Yes.
And those are pretty darn deep roots in Jackson and in Wyoming. So when did your family first come to Wyoming?
Well, it was in the early 1900s, and it was actually my great-grandparents homesteaded here in the valley. And my great-grandfather, Peter Hansen and Sylvia Hansen, were the start of our family in the valley. And Peter Hansen was in the state senate, as a matter of fact. And so when the political activity got involved, it started with him. And that having that generational opportunity here. It started with my great-grandparents, my grandparents, my parents. What a wonderful thing to be able to grow up in that beautiful part of the state, to have that family, to grow up in a small town,
mm-hmm.
and all the friends. So it's been wonderful, and to have deep roots in Wyoming that way serves me very well.
Well, what was it like growing up on a cattle ranch in Jackson Hole? I mean, this was in the 60s.
Yes.
When you were growing up?
Well, it was wonderful. You know, it's one of those things as a kid, when you grow up, you probably don't have the appreciation for how wonderful it is. But I've certainly, doing what I do now, have gained even a greater appreciation for just, you couldn't have a better childhood growing up on a ranch in Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and having the experience of learning how to work, learning how to deal with life and death and animals, mm-hmm. the responsibility that goes with that. And then to have the community and the community support, it was just fantastic. And, of course, when I was growing up on the ranch, I sort of envied the town kids because we milked our own cows and we had cow's milk. And I was a youngster. I couldn't stand the fact that I had cream floating on top of my milk. And I loved it when I got to go visit my stable night and the town kids, and they had carton milk because it had no cream on it. And now, of course, I would love to have the opportunity to have extra cream in my milk.
Well, you graduated from Jackson Hole High School.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, 1980.
Well, do you have a favorite story or memory that you would like to share from your high school days?
Well, gosh, there are so many of them. I played sports in high school and great friends there. Had some great teachers in high school and junior high and elementary school. And I remember one of my social studies teachers in high school, I was going to do an internship at the legislature. And I didn't know how to tie a tie, and he taught me how to tie a tie. I remember skipping school as a senior and getting punished with cleaning up trash for a couple days in high school. And but it was all of it, the entire education experience here was so wonderful because we did have great teachers. And the teachers and the whole high school experience with a friend, it couldn't have been better. And when I reflect on those days, I regret not appreciating as much as I should have at the time.
At the time.
How wonderful it was.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a great experience. And as I raise my kids now through the education experience, I hope that they too reflect back and say it was a wonderful time in their life.
Well, it sounds like you might have been thinking about going into politics even as early as high school.
You know, it's interesting because some of my friends say, oh, yeah, we always knew you were going to be governor. But my memory is a little different on this because I know in my memory, which my friends say is not accurate, in my mind, the last thing I knew I was going to do when I got out of high school is I said, I'd never get into politics. I didn't have much certainty on my future, but I knew I was never getting into politics. And it really was, in my mind, that way for a long time until maybe 7 or 8 years ago. And I think what happens is, what an amazing thing when you have those dinner table conversations with your family and you think you're not listening or you're not particularly paying attention to them. But the idea of service to a community and to your state, I think over all those dinner table conversations, stuck with me. And it would just that gene just didn't switch on till later on. But it did make a difference. It didn't necessarily need to be politics, but just the idea of service to your community and state, that stuck with me.
Were you close to your grandparents, Cliff and Martha Hansen?
Yeah, very close. They were remarkable people. When Granddad was in the state or in the U.S. Senate, and he'd come back, he was able to put away all the pressures and everything and be a granddad. And Grandma was a grandma. And they were so tuned in to our lives, and they knew what we liked and what we didn't like. And Granddad, in particular, was just, he got you involved. He didn't say sit aside and watch. You know, if something needed to be done, even though we were young, he'd say, come over and help lift this, or come here and help shovel here. He believed in teaching by example and teaching by participation, and we were very close. Even more remarkable is that my kids got to know Granddad and Grammy before they passed away. And that's a treasure for me to know that they got to have that relationship with those special people.
Tell us one of your favorite memories of your grandparents.
Boy, that would be hard to pick one. But I think certainly one of the great memories was when they... when they were in the Senate, my parents put me on a plane to fly back to Washington, D.C. I was young enough, I think it may be 12 or something, and they had the flight attendants arranged, so I arrived there. My grandparents were late getting to the airport in Washington, D.C., which wasn't a big deal, and they weren't that late, but I just remember their reaction. That they were so upset about that, and I think that's one of my favorite memories because both of them had such love and affection for the entire family, and they cared about us in a way that was just remarkable. And then as on top of that memory, as you meet people in the community, and as I meet people now, I can't tell you how remarkable it is when I'll have a person my age or older come and say, I met your grandparents when I was a kid, and he or she, your grandma took time to talk to me. They sent me a note, and that is just a wonderful thing to hear now as governor that, they were that way and affected so many people's lives. And then you have people who say, I got into politics because I met your granddad when I was in junior high, and he told me this is what I should do. And there's many wonderful memories, but that level of how they cared about people, they were both so genuine in caring about everyone they met.
What most inspired you watching your mother and your grandfather's career?
They said, if you want to do something, try it. And, when I decided to run for governor, it was sort of this, there was a fair amount of people said, well, you got to first run for this, and then you got to do this, and you got to do this. But I think that influence from both of them is, if you think you can do something and you do it well and it's worthwhile, try it. And don't be afraid of failure. Both of them... my grandparents and my mom, if it's worth trying, do it. And don't have that fear factor. Don't let your decisions be ruled by fear. It is all right to try something you believe in and fail, and you'll be surprised more often than not that you may have success.
Were you involved in your mom's political campaign when she
was
running?
I was.
Okay.
At that time, it was another reminder I never wanted to get in politics. One of the things that she had me do is I was actually, while she was out campaigning, I was taking care of the ranch. As I say, this is an example of her. When she decided to run, I was in Gillette practicing law, and she said, can you come back and run the ranch? And I said, sure, I will do that. And she was fully vested in the ranch, and she could have sat me down for 2 days and say, here's what I want you to do or not do. But instead, she gave me very simple instructions, which has always stuck with me. She said, when your dad, your grandparents, when they gather cattle in the fall, they always rode the longest loop. They always rode the toughest ground and the longest way. And that's our expectation of you, is if there's a job to do and you have people here at the ranch, it's you who we expect to do the hardest job and to work the hardest. And that was her message to me. And then she went off and campaigned. But later in the, as it got close to the end of the election cycle, she had me, she said, I want you to go to some towns and go door to door. And that's why I am so bad at that. And I was so bad at it. And I had my brother, he joined me, which bolstered my courage a little bit. And but we both, it was not an easy thing for us to do, but we gladly did it to try to help her out. But that was another, after that campaign, this is another reason that I shouldn't be in politics. I'm not good at it. But when you do it for yourself, somehow it's a little easier. So.
Did that help you have the courage to run? Or in some ways, because you have a political family, a well-known family, how did you develop your own voice?
Yeah, it was important to me when I campaigned. I did not bring up in speeches or letters my mom or my grandparents, because I didn't want people to say, hey, his platform is that he's somehow by blood, because in Wyoming that's not how we do things. It's not ivory tower, it's not families, it's what are you going to do or not do. And it was towards the end of my campaign, I got a letter from an individual who was critical of me for never mentioning my grandfather. He said, why are you distancing yourself from your grandfather? He was a great man. And I wrote back and I said, on the contrary, I mean, I'm very, very close to him and very much so admire what he did, but I think part of what he did is he wouldn't want of me to say, vote for me because I am his grandson. I didn't mention that in the campaign. But in terms, what was interesting is I was thinking about my mom as I made my decision to run, because she ran and she ultimately lost. But she never regretted the opportunity, and she never regretted, again, hey, if you think you need to do it and it's important, do it. And don't be afraid of that result. Do your best. If it turns out fine, great, but do it in a way that if it doesn't turn out, you're still proud of the way that you've done it, that you've advanced the discussion and advanced the debate. And so we never put out anything negative. We just said, here's what we're going to say, because I wanted to say at the end, if I wasn't successful, that just by the process, maybe I've helped the system. And I think that's what we need to reinforce with anyone running for political office, is that your responsibility doesn't start when you get into office. It starts in how you run your campaign. Are you in a positive way advancing debate and the issues, so that if you don't win, you've still helped the system.
Still done a really good job at creating awareness and
exactly
contributing.
Yeah.
Well, back to family. You've been married for about
21 years.
21 years.
Yes.
Well, would you tell us how you and Carol met?
Well, I'm glad she's not here to give her version of the story. I was in law school at UW, and she was an undergrad. This is probably more than you want, but I had met her one night at a bar in Laramie, and I had asked her to dance. And it was a short dance, and then she was off. But I recognized her, but I didn't know her name or anything else. And so I had a friend who was an undergraduate. And I said, I'd sure like to meet that lady. He said, hey, I've seen her here and here and here. And he actually said, hey, I think she may be around here. And so she was walking from classroom to classroom. I had to kind of track her, run her down. And then I asked her out. She said yes. But to this day, she denies ever having had that first meeting where we danced. So I was not as memorable for her as she was for me.
So. And you have two children?
We have two children, and as an example of how important family is, my daughter, Mary, is named after my mom, and my son, Pete, is named after my dad.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And my daughter is 14, soon to be 15, and she's talking about driving, and my son is now 13. And they've been a part of this process. And it's interesting for them because I think kids get over the whole issue at school more quickly than adults do. But we've tried to make them as much as part of the process. When we can travel with them, we bring them along. It's always not their funnest thing, but mm-hmm. I think they're learning. When we have dinners at the governor's mansion, we have them help the staff there clean up and serve and everything else, because of that same message. We want them to know this isn't about us, it's about us providing a service to the state. So we have them do those chores around the house to reinforce that.
How does being part of Wyoming's first family affect them personally?
You know, it was, again, you know, the first couple of months, I think it was a little different for them. But kids, you know, like I said, I think in some ways they're better than adults. It's not your title, it's, you know, how you act and how you behave that is most important. And so kids get over that whole title situation real quickly. And it's been great. Other than the first couple of months, you know, they are now just they're Pete and Murray, and they're a friend or they're not a friend, and that whole first family thing, I don't think plays much of a role in their lives, which we are glad of. We want it to be as normal as possible. You know, when they get in trouble at school, and the teachers report it to us, we call and say thanks for doing the right thing, because we want them treated just like any other kid.
We live in such a quickly changing and fast-paced culture and society now, and I guess my question to you would be, what are the most important values to you and Carol to cultivate in your kids?
Well, I think certainly it's that one of service, and I think it's also important for us to, you know, our schedule's crazy, but we do try to have dinners when we can, and we certainly want to enforce the value of family and family support, because one, we love being around our kids, but we also want, as they grow older and have their own families, you know, how important that is. But I also think that if I could instill in my kids, just in terms of their success, this notion that don't allow others to set your career goal. Don't allow others to say you can or cannot do something. If you start listening to that, you're going to be limited by what others dictate. You've got to decide for yourself what you can do, how you can help. And don't, when somebody says you cannot do that, ignore that or use it as a motivator. And you will have great success, and you will have failures. But each failure is an opportunity to learn. And I think sometimes in society, you know, people just are so worried about, you know, it won't work out, but and they are afraid to try things. And we certainly want to provide whatever that is, if it's courage or just steadfast sort of stubbornness to not be afraid to try those things that you have an interest in, that you think are beneficial.
Much like your mother's advice to you.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
In terms of your kids' education, what do you see happening in the schools right now that maybe are good things or things that maybe concern you?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me is we continually get rated as a state in terms of where we are in education. And from our perspective, our kids in elementary school and junior high and now my daughter in high school, I think their experience has been exceptional. And I don't just say that because I can't do their math homework. That's more of a statement on my inability. But we think, you know, they have favorite teachers, and they have some that we think are exceptional. But overall, we think the experience has been wonderful. And so that's one of the things as we think about education in the state is it seems to me there is a bit of a disconnect between here's what the feds say is happening versus what I see firsthand with my own kids. And I know I can't just use that as a determination statewide, but you know, here in Teton County with the dual immersion language program, with what we see going on there in Teton County in the public schools, we have some extraordinary things going on in education in the state. We do have some struggles as well, but one of the reasons I wanted to get some waiver opportunities from the federal government is I want to address it with Wyoming solutions and Wyoming specific rather than this is, we are sort of this monolithic thing here in Wyoming that we're all the same. We're not. And so I wanted to have that flexibility rather than the federal government saying, here's what we want to do. But as far as the experience for our own kids, it's been tremendous.
Well, I have a 16-year-old. How are you dealing with cell phone usage, texting? Do you have some rules?
We do. And we are, this is probably where our kids would say we're, you know, sticks in the mud. But I of course, have a cell phone, and we all have cell phones, but I'm sort of a fuddy-duddy on this. I see so many people, you know, walk around in public and in other places where our heads are down, and I worry that something's happening there in terms of the communication that we otherwise would have with one another. And so we don't go for that texting stuff. They have phones to call us when the soccer game's over. That is a limited phone usage. But texting and email, I don't want them in their rooms at night emailing all night long. And I think they need to, they will go to that point, I'm sure, as they get older. But right now we're fairly restrictive on that. Not to say that that's the best advice. That's just where we're headed. If you have better advice, I would love to hear it because it is. I think it is an issue with how we communicate with one another. And it's so different. You know, you think when we grew up, I mean, it's the world has changed almost overnight with regard to that.
Unbelievable.
It continues to change mm-hmm. even more rapidly. And where does all that lead? I don't know. But so we're old-fashioned, I guess, on that.
So your kids have a flip phone? They don't have an iPhone?
No, they don't have the iPhones. And they have it's a flip phone. And then mm-hmm. my son would probably not appreciate it, but he has trouble actually finding his anymore. So we had him one. We don't know where it is. But my daughter has kept track of her, so they kind of share one phone now, and we think maybe that's okay. So.
Well, I find every parent's answer interesting, because it's always an ongoing discussion as your kids get into their teen years, especially.
Yeah.
And they even have classes on it in the high school. And
oh, is that right?
In the junior high, having people discuss it, because it's a huge issue.
Well, you know, it also, especially at the junior high and high school level, you worry about cyberbullying, and mm-hmm. you worry mm-hmm. about, you know, at that age, you know, you can make a decision that is a poor decision, that in our growing up, you know, it was just that 5 minutes. You wish you wouldn't have made that decision mm-hmm. or taken that action. But once you put it out there electronically, it's a document that can, or a picture that can be used over and over again. And I do worry about that with kids and what they put out there, because it's hard to get rid of something once it's sent out there in the cyber world.
Oh, yeah. Just look at what's happened to the political figures in
yeah.
the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No texting pictures, please.
Right.
Yeah, and I, you know, in cyberbullying and then right. as a former prosecutor, you know, child pornography, all of that blends into that. And so it's one of these, to me, it's a technology that is a great tool, but it has come upon us without us thinking through all the implications or even where we're going to go with it. It's like all of a sudden just brand new, we have this new tool, and I think as we develop the new technology, we'll along with it have to develop sort of, I don't know if it's etiquette or rules or design on where we want to go with that. Certainly exciting to be able to have those tools, but as parents, we got to wade through of how our kids use it.
Well, to change course a little bit, as governor, what do you see as the most critical or pressing issues facing our state and Wyoming? And I know that's kind of a broad question,
yeah.
but maybe just discuss those that are closest to your heart.
Well, I think, you know, in general, you know, one of the issues that we faced is that is going to continue to be an issue is because we are this great rural state, but much of our surface and minerals are owned by the federal government, that when we do things in the state, you know, we have layers of bureaucracy that a state like Texas, which has very minimal federal ground, doesn't have to go through. We are fortunate. We have Yellowstone, Grand Teton, the forests. Those add so much to not only our economy but our quality of life, but they also add layers of complexity on when we are to do things. And so I think it has been and it will continue to be, you know, this struggle between the federal government and the state and how do we go. You know, and I, as you may have heard from my previous comments, I believe Wyoming and the people in Wyoming are very well suited to make the best decisions for Wyoming. Now, I understand we're not in a perfect world where we get to do whatever we want. The federal government is always going to be a player. But what I would like to see in the future is for us to continue to provide by example, not just words, but by example. Listen, we can do some remarkable things in Wyoming and in our states. And please don't just dismiss it because it came from the state.
Right.
Look mm-hmm. and see what we're doing. And, mm-hmm. and the federal government, you know, don't be afraid to take leadership from the states. The states were designed to be laboratories of democracy, meaning we may not get it right, but we can fix it. And there's an opportunity for the federal government to learn about leadership from the states that I think will continue to be an important issue for Wyoming and all the states going forward.
So, Governor Mead, when you leave office, what are the things that you want people to remember about you and your leadership?
I would hope that I do a good enough job that when I leave, people would say that, you know, he advanced the citizens of Wyoming and the state and the things that are important to the state. And, you know, the mix of things that are important to the state, you know, our wildlife, our beauty, our open spaces, our minerals, our tourism, our kids, our social services, all of that. I want to have been known for whatever the problem is, that I tried to dive in with both feet and try to address it. And, you know, my staff sometimes advise me, you know, that's not an issue you probably need to get involved in. You know, it's been around. But I'm like, what am I here for? You know, if there's an opportunity to address it and move forward, you know, in the Yellowstone National Park, plowing is one. I mean, you know, let's see if we can help. So I would like to be known for that. And certainly, as you think about your legacy, if you get into it for the right reasons, that you love the state, then when you leave, you want to have said, I've helped the state and the people, and that I worked as hard as I could to do that. And then beyond that, you know, I'm not one who says I want to be in politics for 30 years. I'm sort of, let's get in, dive in, do our best, and then turn it over to the next person, and he or she will continue that on. And my great-grandfather, Pete Hansen, used to say, you know, in Wyoming, where you find one blade of grass, leave two. And he was an ag guy. But it goes beyond that. It's the obligation of each generation to leave the place a little better than you found it. And that sticks with me. And I think about it in terms of being governor, too. If I can leave that additional blade of grass when I get out of office in that way, I will be happy.
I have another question. When you're out there in the world, or even in D.C., and you're talking to people about Wyoming, what's the picture they have in their head of who we are as a state?
Well, it's one of the fun things I get to do, either traveling to D.C. or overseas to talk about Wyoming, because I will go on until they leave the room or they tell me to be quiet, because there's just so many, there's so many wonderful things, and I get very excited about the opportunity to talk about Wyoming people and the state itself. But, you know, some of the impressions are, you know, like overseas, they know Yellowstone. Around the country, they know Grand Teton National Park. They seem to be, or they, hey, you've got great skiing out there. Or sometimes I heard it's windy out there. And then, unfortunately, sometimes, even in D.C., they'll say, now, what part of Colorado is Wyoming? And which of course drives me insane. Then they're going to get the lecture whether they want it or not.
Right.
But I think that people recognize this as rural state. I think people who pay attention to all the states recognize that we are unsurpassed in our recreation and tourism opportunities, that we export more energy than any other state in the country, mm-hmm. which is good for Wyoming and it's good for the country. I like the fact that we help people start businesses around the country. I think that people also, which is almost uniform, is people who have visited this state say something like, you have most friendly people there. And as governor, what mm-hmm. a wonderful thing. I mean, you loved hearing that. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it was the reverse of that, how sad would that be? But that mm-hmm. is something that Wyoming should hold to and be proud of, that we have that reputation of a very friendly citizen. Because what a great message that is for visitors and businesses alike, mm-hmm. that we are known as a very friendly, very open state. Mm-hmm. And so that, I love hearing that.
You don't ever hear that question that asked, do we still ride our horses to school?
Oh, yeah. you sometimes get that. It's the same group that says, what part of Colorado are you at? So that's a very small minority. But, people, as I said, that pay attention recognize that, you know, we have this phenomenal state, and they'll say, well, I know that so-and-so lives there in the summer, or so-and-so just moved there. I mean, we have some great leaders, I'm not talking about political leaders, but citizen leaders and mm-hmm. people in business mm-hmm. and great thinkers. And, that's very exciting. But that message that we are still a state where things can get done, that we are a friendly state, that's wonderful. And that's mm-hmm. not me telling them that. They say that to me.
Right.
Well, thank you very much. We have enjoyed this thoroughly. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, thank you for the time and for the program. It's great to have an opportunity to discuss things that are sort of not nuts and bolts as we did previously on the budget and numbers and to discuss it, and a great opportunity for me to express what a privilege it was to grow up here in Jackson.